from the Carter Subaru Studios. This is the G and Ursula Show with G Scott and Ursula Voitin.
Good morning, and thank you for listening to the G and Ursula Show. Good morning to you, Ursula.
Good morning, G. Happy Wednesday to everybody. A lot of people are doing a lot of confessions right now on our text line and sending me text messages, too, on my phone, wanting to confess about the things that I did during sleepovers.
Hey, what happened was folks started keeping it in the buck, and they was like, you know what? I got to be honest. You know my girl, Honey. How's Honey doing?
Yeah, so Honey is texting me. That's my sister, who also has COVID. And she's texting me and saying all the bad things that happened during sleepovers and how she completely agrees with you. Interesting.
You know, the spirit, the energy, the enthusiasm, Honey and I kind of got some of that similar, huh?
I think you do. It's probably why I love you so much. I adore my sister, and I love you so much. You guys are both spunky and just make me laugh all the time. Yes.
Good, good. What's coming up on this show, Ursula?
Okay, well, we're going to hear from Rachel Bell after Heather's newscast at 10:30, and she's going to be talking about supporting Black-owned businesses and this cool effort. So I want to hear more about that. Actually, we're going to all hear her feature at the same time. So that's coming up after the 10:30 newscast. And then right now, we've got a very serious story that we need to get to.
All right, let's get to it.
What's new at 10?
And this one is surely going to get your blood boiling. You heard a bit of it on Heather's newscast. A convicted felon accused of randomly attacking a nurse at a light rail station is now charged with murder and another assault. All of these allegedly happened around the same time last March. The suspect's name is Alexander J. He made headlines because there was a video that went viral showing him throwing the 62-year-old Harborview nurse down a flight of stairs at the International District Station, and then he also kicked her in the face. Again, a random attack. But now police say he also attacked another woman, stabbing her 10 times at least with a knife. And he's also accused of attacking another stranger in Capitol Hill. And in that case, prosecutors say he used a heavy piece of rebar to bludgeon this man to death. King County prosecutor spokesman Casey McNerthy spoke with Cairo 7.
We're going to keep arguing that this is somebody who should not be out of custody because there's a clear danger to the public and we want to keep people safe. And we're going to keep showing the severity of this crime spree because we want the public to be safe.
And bail is now set at $5.6 million. And, gee, this guy had just been released from prison a few weeks before he allegedly committed these other attacks. One of them, again, now we're finding out, was deadly.
This is awful, right? This is heartbreaking because this person should have never been out of jail to kill someone. And there's so much into this. Like, these are random attacks. These are attacks on people that he did not know. Usually that's rare. You know, usually the attacks are on people, most of the time, violent crimes are on people that folks know. And in this case, it wasn't. This is a failure. This is a failure by the system. And I know that this is something that is going to make folks scramble to figure out how to prevent this from happening. And this is also going to be a lot of people saying, see, I told you so. I told you that this is happening often. And it is happening at least far too often. Ursula, I don't know how far I can go on this topic other than to say how awful it is.
Well, there's a few other angles that you have to consider. So first of all, he does have an extensive criminal history. 5 felony convictions in our state alone. He has other felony crimes in California. Again, how this person ever got out in the first place. But this is an illustration of how broken our system is. Because on top of everything else, earlier this year, he failed a competency hearing that was in June. Mm-hmm. He was ordered to go to treatment. So when you say he failed a competency hearing, meaning they think that he's not mentally competent to stand trial, right? So he's supposed to go to get treatment at Western State Hospital, but Western, as we have been documenting over the years, has no room for him. So then the hospital was ordered to pay him $250 a day until he can get admitted. So we're trying to get an update on that status. Like, wait a minute. Are taxpayers then now paying him because there's no room for him at a mental state? The whole thing is so screwed up. But again, this guy was out. He had only been released from prison just a couple of weeks beforehand. Mm-hmm. And within a short amount of time, I think it's within 48 hours, he, you know, threw that nurse down the stairs and just brutally beat her and kicked her, stabs a woman in the face. And then, you know, and then now we're just finding out he also beat someone to death with rebar.
Maybe. Okay. Sometimes this is why I like doing a show with you, because I get to refer to you as, because you've been covering news for over 33 years. Well, let me ask you this. Back in the day when you covered news, does stuff like this happen often, where somebody would do this and then get out 48 hours later? Because I don't remember these type of things happening. When I think about people in my family, cousins that have been arrested, maybe for drugs or maybe for assault and all those things, I remember really, really high bails. And I remember, oh, you're going to have to stay in jail till trial. So I guess I'm just confused. Is this a new thing that these judges are doing? So I'm asking you for your expertise.
Yeah, well,
was this
it's
a combination
years ago? Yeah, it's a combination of a whole lot of things. First of all, I mean, we're hearing more again because we have more sources for information. So that's
true.
One thing. Do these sorts of things happen? We haven't always had an issue with overcrowding at Western. So there was a time when there was actually space where you could actually put someone in there if they were mentally ill and needed to be held there until there was room in the jail, or they could get treatment, or they could stand trial. But in this case, now the taxpayers are paying to have paying him, someone who's accused of these heinous crimes, because there's no room, essentially. It points to lack of mental health resources, first of all. Secondly, someone who's got this extensive of a criminal history, I don't think the dude should be walking. I don't think he should see the light of day. Just to be clear, the 48 hours I was referring to was these attacks happened within 48 hours.
Okay.
He wasn't released within 48
okay.
hours.
Okay. So, do you know offhand from the first time that he was arrested for the first assault, how soon he got out of jail and how soon that next crime happened,
well,
in which he killed someone?
So he was arrested, and we're only finding out about these other attacks now, after an investigation. Right. Now, keep in mind, we have a depleted SPD. We have a jail that, because of the pandemic, couldn't be operating at full function. We had prosecutor's office not fully operating because of the pandemic. And just, you know, we talked about backload of cases. I mean, we do have judges in some cases who, you know, there's this real push for rehabilitation versus putting people behind bars. But you can't be releasing people who, especially people who have a propensity for violence and are mentally ill, you can't be releasing them out onto the streets because you have no room. Those need to be priority cases where you figure out a way to keep them away from the public.
You're right, Ursula. And I just want to say this. I'm all for rehabilitation. I'm all for people getting second chances, being able to get an opportunity to be better in life. But let me be clear on something. If you attack a woman, if you attack the elderly, I'm okay with you being rehabilitated. But first, you need to go serve these 10 years in prison first. First. And then you can get on the rehabilitation. Because this whole idea of trying to do something new and not getting jail time, if you do something wrong, oh, you need consequences. And don't take that away. Because if there's someone that's like, I can get away with this and just maybe I might not get any consequences, then yes, that's a problem.
Yeah. And there are some people who just are nowhere close to qualifications to fit into some of these rehab programs. And I think Alexander J. would be one of them, just mm-hmm. based on the level of violence of the crimes that he's committed in the past, and then also his mental status. So, but this is just, you talk about illustration of the failure of the system. This particular case is one of them. I want to talk about something that is going on in a local school district. And that is our next story in What's New. The Central Kitsap School District is now being sued by a former student for $3 million. Isaac Yates is one of three students who were raped by the school's cheer coach back in 2019. And he spoke with Cairo 7 TV.
It just makes my stomach turn into knots. I get flashbacks. I believe that I have PTSD because of it. It was terrifying, and even now it still is.
His attorney is Jeff Campeach. He says that Tyson Ebert, the coach, would throw parties and have kids sleep over.
The predator was having parties at his home, and these students were spending the night there. Some students even wrote letters to the principal expressing their concern that this coach made them uncomfortable, and they were uncomfortable about how he was treating these special students.
So again, he has pled guilty, and he served some time, but he has already been released, and I think he has had to register as a sex offender. But in the last hour, G, we were talking about sleepovers. Now, I'm going to tell you right now, I would never, ever, ever, ever allow my kids to sleep over at a coach's house. I mean, that to me would be a red flag.
Yeah.
Not for a teacher, not for a coach.
Right.
And then you told me that there were situations where it was or maybe it was
so, okay. No. What I said to you this morning, I'll say it again. Maybe some of the kids that I coached at Mount Rainier High School back in the day, or some of the kids that that I coached when I was at when I coached at SWAC and I coached football, I had kids spend the night at my house. Now I had other kids as well that were there, and it was like a cool, fun time, having fun. So I loved it. I loved it because it was an opportunity, because I know it was going to be happiness and it was going to be fun. But unfortunately, we have a history in this country of some youth coaches and just coaches in general taking advantage of kids. Look at Larry Nassar, who was the gymnastics trainer from the medical guy from Michigan State. Look at how long Larry Nassar was able to get away with that. And why? Why did that happen? Because
power dynamic.
Power dynamic is one. And two, I've learned that sometimes, Ursula, there'll be rumblings of it, or there'll be talk about it, but nobody really wants to come forward. So sometimes the best thing they do is like, you know what? I'm just going to mind my business and I'm going to stay away. And nobody wants to speak up, because they are afraid of being alienated. And I got to just share this story, because I've actually never really told this story. And maybe my mom, if she's listening right now, if she's listening right now, she'll probably call me. Now I'm going to tell this story.
Okay.
So I started playing for this new baseball team. I was about 11 years old. I was playing for this new baseball team, and it was a travel baseball team, and we traveled around. Well, we'd always canvass and all that and raise money to go on these different trips. Well, one trip we had gone to Wisconsin to play, and on the way into Wisconsin, we stopped off at Wisconsin Dells. Huge fun time. Well, we were all in our hotels, and we're all in the different rooms. We're having fun and playing cards and all that stuff. And I remember, then the coach brought in beer, right? And I thought, I had never in my life seen adults give beer to kids, right? And I thought, wow, this is a different type of team. And the kids were excited. Now, mind you, we're 11 years old. There's beer, right? So then we're all playing around, and I'm like, well, I'm not drinking any beer. So we're watching and everything. And what ends up happening is, one of the coaches asked one of the kids to come with him. And I remembered kids like, you're going now. And I'm like, man, what are they talking about? Well, long story short, maybe a month later or so, I come home one day, and my mom says, hey, you're no longer playing on that baseball team. And I said, why? She says, something's not right with that baseball coach. He is too much of a good-looking man to not be married, never have been married, doesn't have kids, and he wants to take you guys all around. Something's not adding up. So if my mom's listening right now, I just want to tell her, and even at that age, at 11 years old, I did not tell her what I saw. I didn't really technically see anything, but I did feel weirdness. You know, here I am right now in my mid-40s, and I'm just now admitting, Mom, if you're listening, you're right.
Okay, and your mom is a corrections officer, or was a corrections officer, right?
Like, you know what I mean? Like my mom is like the biggest detective. You cannot pull anything over on my mom. And my mom had, I'm like, she has no basis. I'm like, Mom, what are you talking about? She's like, you're not playing.
And you want to get so mad, but then they're right.
I was fighting. I was like, you're wrong. She's like, yep, it's all right. You're not playing for that baseball team anymore. I was so mad at my mom. Check this out. I was so mad at my mom that I had convinced myself that nothing actually was going on.
Oh, no. You only saw what you wanted to see. Right. I didn't see that beer. Okay, but because I know we're going to hear from a lot of parents, and it's not to say that I want to make it clear that we're not victim blaming. I mean, what happened is horrific.
Yeah,
I'm glad that the family is suing the school district, because if it truly was that people were complaining and saying something's up with this coach, the district does have an obligation to check it out and to investigate and to have policies in place so that kids aren't put in those positions. And yes, I mean, both my boys played football and they did other team sports. And yes, there are things that do, you know, include overnight, but there are other adults in the room. You know what I mean? There are parent supervisors. It's not just you and your coach.
Right. Ursula, I know we're going late, but I got to share this text. I'm not going to share the name. Somebody texted in. You'll see the text as you can see it. They texted in. Okay. They says, when I was a sophomore in high school, there was a PE teacher. And when he found out that it was your birthday and this only applied to the girls, he would come into the locker room and he would spank you. Our underwear was on, but it was still very uncomfortable. Then I went to community college after graduation, and I took a sex ed course. I looked to the left, and there it was, that PE teacher. He was being punished by the school district, and the only thing they made him do was take a sex ed class talk about uncomfortable.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, Ursula, if we're being honest, in the 80s and 90s, society handled these discussions awful. And it really wasn't until the Me Too movement that a true spotlight was shined on this stuff.
So. Yeah, and I know that there are a lot of people who are still struggling as adults because of things that happened during their high school and middle school years, and my heart goes out to them. But again, yeah, when there are red flags, the district definitely has an obligation, the leaders, the other teachers, but most importantly, that coach, and it's just disgraceful. So I'm glad the family's suing.
All right, coming up next, Rachel Bell talked with a very popular, famous chicken entrepreneur, connoisseur here. And by the way, Ursula, I don't know if you know, but his wife actually listens to the show every single
day. Oh, I love that.
We do that next. It's Gene Ursula.
You can ring my bell. welcome back to the G and Ursula Show. Happy Wednesday to all of you. We love, love, love our loyal listeners, and you wanted to do a shout out to one of them.
Because we're going to be talking about, Rachel Bell does a feature on Lewis Rudd, and his wife, Jackie Rudd, listens to our show all the time. But the best thing about Jackie is a few years back when I told her, when she met me and I do radio, she was telling me how much of a fan she was. And her telling me that really gave me a lot of confidence, Ursula. So I really appreciate it. Yeah. So I got a lot of love for Jackie Rudd.
I get it. When especially when you're first starting and someone mm-hmm. says, I really love your show.
Yes.
That was the thing with Angela Russell and King 5 wanting to do the feature on us.
Uh-huh.
At the beginning, it was like, gives you a little vote of confidence. And for that, I will forever be grateful. So thank you, Jackie. So the reason we're bringing Jackie up is because the Black Business Conference is being put on this weekend in Seattle by the co-founders of Ezell's Chicken. And now that they have had many, many years of success, they want to help other Black entrepreneurs and small business owners create generational wealth. And as you mentioned, G, Rachel Bell got the chance to sit down with Lewis Rudd, who is the CEO of Ezell's.
Ezell's Chicken is a 36-year-old Seattle institution, beloved by Oprah and the Seattle Seahawks, with 18 locations around the Pacific Northwest.
We opened the first location in Seattle across the street from Garfield High School, February 3rd, 1984. I was at the ripe old age of 26.
That's Lewis Rudd, co-founder, president, and CEO of Ezell's. He owns the business with his brother and sister. And now that they have years of success behind them, their focus is on helping other Black entrepreneurs. During the pandemic, Rudd watched as many Black-owned businesses suffered or shuttered.
Being Black in business, I understand a lot of the challenges that Black entrepreneurs face.
So he and his co-founder siblings launched an initiative.
The RUB initiative, Raising Up Black Businesses. There's a stat out there that says there's only 2.4% of businesses owned by Black or African Americans.
The initiative was launched with some well-timed funding.
DoorDash was looking to do a promotional campaign with Ezell's, and it was going to amount to about $40,000. I asked if I could divert those funds to more needed businesses in the community that I was aware of. There were other partners, Bargreen Ellison, Cisco, Pepsi. We raised over $110,000 to support Black-owned businesses, and we gave out grants to 20 businesses last year, and we're going to do more grants this year. And out of that process of receiving the applications, it was very clear that not only did the businesses need access to capital and also access to information, which led to this year's idea around the Black Business Leadership Conference.
The Black Business Leadership Conference is this Saturday in Seattle, in honor of August being National Black Business Month.
An opportunity to promote and inspire young Black entrepreneurs, small Black business owners, and help them with what it takes to structure their business for growth. From the legal space, I mean, we'll have attorneys there. Why is it important to have everything documented and signed? You know, too many times the handshake takes place. It'll be information on marketing, branding. What types of insurance policies should you have? Create that generational wealth. Businesses that you can pass on to your family members or be a benefit to others in the community by providing additional employment.
Rudd says it took 5 years for a bank to give them a loan to open Ezell's.
One of the things that we learned later on was the redlining in the neighborhood that we were in. There was no loans available if you lived in that zip code. The lack of access to capital. So fast forward to today, we want to try and remove as many barriers as we can. We want to acknowledge what happened in the past, but we want to focus on the future.
Which is why the conference is tailored to Black business owners.
And it's not an exclusive conference for Black business owners. However, the focus is on Black businesses. Too many times I would go to conferences, and in those conferences, I would be one of maybe four Black people there. Maybe two of us are business owners. I'm not walking around bitter and angry about it. I'm walking around saying, how can I do something about it?
The conference was purposefully kept affordable. It's $65 to attend in person, $25 for a virtual ticket, and there are still scholarships available.
A lot of problems solved through growing Black-owned businesses, the opportunities for higher education, better health care, moving away from renting to owning. I mean, all these are benefits of being in business.
You can find a link to register for the conference at mynorthwest.com/Rachel Bell.
Wow. Ursula, I always know when an interview is good when you're quiet.
That's yeah, I was listening and I was just thinking about, first of all, I love Ezell's chicken. I remember when I actually used to go to 23rd and Cherry, where that first was right across from Garfield High School. Right. And I would travel that far. And then remember when Oprah made a big deal of the chicken and had it, she had it flown to her?
Right. Right.
I love the fact that someone is like Lewis and his family, they're saying, hey, we have figured it out. We know the challenges that are inherent in trying to launch a business for someone who oftentimes doesn't get those opportunities. And so why don't we share that knowledge? So I was just thinking to myself, like, what makes someone want to do that? I mean, that takes a special person to say, hey, we need to. It's not just about me, but right. We as a community need to support each other to make this happen.
I'm glad you bring that up. So when I used to, it's no secret, I clean cars for the Seahawks, right? And being out there in the parking lot cleaning cars, I had this little thing where I always judged people on how they treat me. Right. Like, you know, how you treat the car wash guy is how I like, man, that's how you are in real life. If you're someone who's like, oh, yeah, whatever. Here, car wash guy, get out of the way. That kind of deal. Well, anyways, the Ezell van used to come up and they would come and feed the Seahawks often. Anyway, there was this guy that would drive the van for the Ezells. And this guy he was always so nice, Ursula. And I'm like, man, you know what? You know, these Ezell owners, they must really take care of their employees. Because, man, this dude, he always real nice. Real nice. Now, this is a true story. Ursula, it wasn't until years later, and I saw Lewis Rudd at an event, and somebody said, hey, G, meet the owner of Ezell's. I was like, I never knew you were the owner the entire. That's the thing about Lewis Rudd. If you meet him, you will never know that he's the owner. He will never tell you that he's the owner. He doesn't act like he's the owner. As a matter of fact, if you see him, you just think, oh, he's just an employee of Ezell's. And I got to tell you, I've had a really good relationship with Lewis Rudd. So everything I'm saying right now, I'll be honest, is very biased. But the dude really is an amazing person. And that is why I believe Ezell's and of course with his partners, his family, is so successful. Yeah, is the chicken good? It's bomb, no doubt. Are the dinner rolls good? Yes, they good. But that ain't the secret to success. I don't care how food you good is, how good your food is, there has to be something else. And Lewis Rudd has that.
Well, and it's an obvious care for the community. So I hope that this Black Business Leadership Conference is successful. It's great that scholarships are available. But here's just a quick question, and I know we're out of time.
What's that?
But to support Black-owned businesses, do you think it's helpful to advertise it as a Black-owned business? I mean, so just someone like me, like other than going into neighborhoods that I know where I'm likely to support a Black-owned business, are there ways that I can make that conscious decision? You know what I'm saying? I mean, like, is it, how would I best know that, hey, this is a Black-owned business and, you know, I can support it?
That's a great question. First of all, I love that it's advertised when the business is Black-owned, because like Lewis Rudd said in that interview, for so long, Black businesses were kept out of the opportunity for being able to own businesses. And that statistic, he said, 2%.
I know,
2% of businesses in the United States of America are Black owned. So, Ursula, you do a fantastic job of going out there supporting businesses. You can't do it right now because you're stuck at home.
I know. I feel like an imposter doing a show from my living room. I'm just going to tell you right now, I'm sweating.
You've been sweating all week. You okay?
Yeah, because, are you sure it's just the weather? Have this little portable, you know, we are going to have our mini heat wave, and I normally have this portable air conditioning on, but I can't do it while doing the show, so now I'm sweating.
All right, coming up next in scenarios, find out what happens when she asks, should I move in with my boyfriend? It's Gina Ursula. Gina Ursula Show. Appreciate you guys listening to the show. I got to get right to scenarios.
Here we go, yo. Here we go, yo. So what's the scenario?
My boyfriend and I have been together for 2 years. We have broken up twice, and both times it was after I caught him trying to get with another woman. The last 8 months have been great, though. But now he tells me he has a great job opportunity in another state. He will double his current pay, and he wants me to move in with him. I have mixed feelings. I don't like that he didn't talk about the move before he took the job. He told me he was going and just asked me to come. Also, I have a girlfriend who moved to be with a guy who cheated on her. She didn't then have the money and was stuck out there for 2 years with no friends and having to save up to come back. We could try to keep the relationship going from different states, but don't really trust him when we live in the same city. What should I do? 888-973-5476 is the State Roofing text line. Ursula, you up the bat first.
Use this as a natural breakup. Goodbye. He's already cheated, or she suspects he cheated twice. And he didn't even bother to ask her about the move and expects her to move. He's doing a big ask and telling her to uproot her life for a relationship that sounds very shaky at best. I would use this as a time to break up. And, you know, if he comes around or if he says, I really made some mistakes in the future and I'd like to, you know, go to counseling, et cetera, et cetera. But you know what? He's just not that into you. He doesn't have a whole lot of respect for you. I just use this as a great time to break up.
Oh, okay. Paul, what do you got?
I'm going to be with Ursula here. I did 2.5 years of long distance, and it takes a lot of trust. It takes a lot of risk. It takes a lot of understanding where you're at. And if you're already being this hesitant, if you've already had these issues, I can't imagine you'd be able to do what I did without a lot more heartbreak and a lot more issues. So I'd say it's time to move on and see where life takes you in the next chapter.
I just want to say that, did you guys hear the last line that I read? She said, quote, we could try to keep the relationship going from different states, but I don't really trust him when we even live in the same city.
There's your answer right there.
Hello.
Yeah. So why?
Hello. First of all, you should have been broke up with Player. You know what I mean? Once? Okay. Twice? What? And then he takes the job in another city without telling you and then like, hey, come with me. You can go, but I can guarantee you, you're going to be back and hopefully you can afford to come back. Don't do it. And Ursula, I'm all for relationships, but this ain't it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I think there's so often that people think that someone's going to change. Now this thing is going to change everything. Now if I show him I'm dedicated and I move with him, he's going to change his ways. No.
Why would somebody put themselves through this pain, I feel like? And at a young age, seeing it on the outside, long-distance relationships, they just don't work. And like you said, G, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, I'm a head out. Got to move on from this one now. It's not matching up with me.
Ursula, you missed that. We missed that yesterday.
Oh, my gosh. Totally. Love having Nick guy.
Appreciate it.
Oh, Ursula, you know what? We agreed way too much so far in this show. So how about this? Coming up next at 11 o'clock, it's time to pull out the pillows. It's time for Agree to Disagree. You guys are listening to the Gene Ursula Show. Before you and me.